We really need new phones.
T-Mobile will cover the cost of four amazing new iPhone 15s, and each line is only $25 a month.
New iPhone 15s? It's better
over here. Only at T-Mobile, get four iPhone 15s on us and four lines for $25 per line per month with eligible trade-in when you switch.
Minimum of 4 lines for $25 per line per month with auto pay discount using debit or bank account. $5 more per line without auto pay, plus taxes and fees. Phone fee at 24 monthly bill credits for well qualified customers. Contact us before canceling account to continue bill credits or credit stop and balance on required finance agreement due. $35 per line connection charge applies. See T-Mobile.com.
Baseball is back, and so is MLB.tv. Watch every out-of-market, regular season game on your favorite streaming devices. Anywhere, anytime, all season long. Follow the action live or on demand. Track four games at once with multi-view mode and catch up with in-game highlights. Plus, original programs, minor league broadcasts, and local pre- and post-game shows. Go to MLB.tv to start your free trial today. Blackout and other restrictions apply. Major League Baseball trademarks used with permission.
Here's a good idea. Have a point. It makes it so much more interesting for the listener.
Good evening, KMOX. Brad Young here this evening on At Your Service. That's not just the name of the show. That describes what we do here at KMOX. We are at your service. Good evening. We're going to be in here till about 11 o'clock this evening. Lots of things on tap. You know me. I'm the legal analyst for KMOX. My law firm, Harris, Dowell, Fisher & Young. But today, is what's great is you get legal analysis and it doesn't cost you a retainer. That's the fabulous part. So we'll be doing a lot of that this evening because, listen, the Supreme Court has been very, very busy. And we're going to break down some of those Supreme Court cases this week. And, you know, you can always listen to KMOX, 1120 a.m., but listen, if you're driving around the St. Louis area, whenever I am, I keep my radio on the FM dial, 98.7. You get to hear KMOX, but the crystal clear quality, try saying that three times fast, of FM. And if you just can't get that for whatever reason, or regardless of where you go, if you want KMOX with you, easy to do. Download the Odyssey.app. Because wherever you go, that's where we are with the Odyssey app. This evening, we got lots of things on tap to discuss this evening. We're going to be talking to a Navy captain in the next segment about how do we take on China and Russia. So that's interesting. Also, I scored this week, I believe, the first interview with Mark McCloskey regarding his run for the Senate. I mean, I don't ask him a lot of questions about his guilty plea last week, but I'll share with you my theory on that. And Charlie Brennan talked about my theory on Donnybrook last week, but nobody agreed with me. But that's okay, because I'm always living out on the limb. It's quite comfortable out there. I've got cable TV. I've got VoIP on my phone. I got cell coverage out there on the edge of the limb. So you know what? If it gets cut, hey, that's fine. I'll enjoy the ride to the ground. So we're going to be talking about all those things. But, hey, producer James, can pull up that microphone. I want to ask you a quick question. I didn't prep him for this because, you know what, spontaneous questioning is always the best. So we got producer extraordinaire James in this evening. And there's a story in California that McDonald's are giving away chicken McNuggets with your COVID shots. But here's my question to you, producer James. Would you get a COVID vaccine at McDonald's?
I wouldn't think so.
What? And I've got my theory on this, but why would you be maybe even slightly hesitant to get a COVID vaccination at McDonald's?
Probably not the most cleanest of places to get a COVID shot.
No doubt. And you know what? I know that the gal who's filling at the Coke machine is not going to be the one giving you the shot. I mean, they're bringing in, you know, actual nurses and medical professionals, but just doesn't the idea of getting a vaccination at McDonald's sound kind of creepy?
Yes.
It does, because I'm thinking, listen, am I getting the Pfizer shot or am I getting lard put into my arm? You know, is this the kind of grease they just cook the chicken McNuggets in? Or is this the Moderna vaccine? I don't know. They're just giving me chicken McNuggets with my shot. Just something about that seems unsavory. And you agree, right?
I would absolutely agree with that.
Oh, great. See, folks, James is a genius because he agrees with me. So thank you, James, for that input. And, you know, speaking of tough things, boy, this has been a tough week for Vice President Kamala Harris, hasn't it? I mean, this week has been truly been tougher on her than it has been for the Cardinals, just because she's been named the border czar by President Biden, and she never went to the border. And so people on the left, people on the right, they were all attacking her. And her response, I think last week when she was asked, listen, you're the border czar. Have you even been to the border? And she said, no, but, you know, I haven't been to Europe either. Like, what kind of an answer is that? I didn't think you were the Europe czar. I think you were the border czar for our border with Mexico. So what does Europe have to do with that? Absolutely zip, nada, goose egg. That's what it has to do with Europe. But that was her answer. But now she's apparently buckled under the pressure, and she'll be going to the border here in the very near future, which now really seems anticlimactic, doesn't it? I mean, if everyone piles on you like Dick the Bruiser at wrestling at the Chase, and then all of a sudden you cave and say, well, okay, I'll go down there. Now it looks like you're just doing it because people have been complaining for the past 3 weeks. Oh, wait, that's because they have been. So so she's going down there, and I'm just wondering, you know, when the president puts you in charge of the border, what's next for you? You know, let's just say in the perfect world, she solves the border crisis. Well, let's see. Next for you, I have you. You have to solve world peace, and then I'm going to put you in charge of solving the problem of hair loss. Oh, wait, Biden's already taking care of that. They're called plugs. But by the way, you know, what's the next job for Kamala Harris if she's been placed in charge of border security? So we'll be anxiously awaiting her updates. Like from what? Like from Tijuana? I really don't want to see Kamala Harris in Tijuana with some questionable bottle of tequila. I don't want to see that. So we'll see what happens if she gets that straightened out. Hey, when we come back from this break, this may be perhaps the most favorite interview that I will ever do. We're going to be talking to Captain Brent Sadler. He's with the Heritage Foundation, a retired Navy captain, and he's going to be talking about military technology, about our naval strategy to stand up to China and to Russia, and where the Biden administration really dropped the ball when it comes to preparing for what's called these near peer conflicts with Russia and China. That's coming up right after the break here on KMOX. Brad Young, at your service. Don't go away.
Next Level Listening. News Radio 1120 AM, 98.7 FM. KMOX, the voice of St. Louis.
Welcome back to At Your Service on KMOX. Brad Young in with you this evening. The greatest foreign threat to the United States today is China. Now, that's not just my assessment, but that's the assessment of the United States Pentagon. And the most dangerous focal point for this conflict is the South China Sea. But the question is, how is the U.S. military responding to this threat? So joining us this evening is Captain Brent Sadler, retired, who last year joined the Heritage Foundation as the Fellow for Naval Affairs after he concluded his distinguished 26-year career in the U.S. Navy as a nuclear power-trained submarine officer and even a foreign area officer. Captain Brent Sadler, now at the Heritage Foundation. Welcome to KMOX. Captain Sadler, welcome to KMOX.
Hi, welcome. Thank you for having me on.
Oh, my pleasure. Hey, you wrote an op-ed piece for Defense One, which is one of those websites. I am a military tech junkie, and I hit all kinds of websites every day, including Real Clear Defense, including the War Zone, including Defense One. And you wrote a piece last week for Defense One discussing how the Biden administration's budget request for the U.S. Navy simply fails to address the current strategic crisis points around the globe. But before we get into your analysis, how would you, first of all, Captain Brent Sadler, how would you summarize the threats that we face now from both Russia and China?
Well, I think we're missing the full context of how they're competing with us. We've, in the last few years, at least on the surface, an acknowledgement that they are changing the status quo at sea and in governments across the world in a very real way. And we have to compete more aggressively on that. The numbers of the ships in the Chinese Navy and their industrial capacity is massive. And that's something that's not quite dawned on policymakers and decision makers quite like it should yet. And then on the Russian side, you've got two decades long, modernization and an improvement of their small but increasingly lethal Navy. So I guess if I could sum it up, I'd say both of them are very lethal, and the Chinese in particular is a full spectrum and highly competent across the spectrum of warfare Navy that we have to address and deal with.
Yeah, clearly the China is the number one threat, but even just this week, it was reported that the Russian Navy was conducting exercises just 35 miles off the coast of Hawaii, and the U.S. Navy had to scramble to activate the USS Carl Vinson Carrier Strike Group just to respond. Is that the kind of threats? Is that an example of the kind of threats that you're talking about?
Absolutely. So, I mean, I saw this back, if you go back to 2012, the Russian, Putin, they had an APEC summit in Australia. He had sent two task forces all the way around the world to make a statement, a military statement, and use it to advocate or to leverage his diplomacy at these summit meetings. And very senior meetings were going on in Canberra and Sydney, Australia at the time. So it's not the first time. However, we haven't grown our Navy. We've gone in the opposite direction, and we've shrunk it continually. We've not been able to get, despite our efforts for the last, five or six years, we have not been able to get above 300 ships. So when you see the military have to scramble and to try to respond to something like this in a place that we're not used to or haven't typically had to have a constant maritime presence, it indicates that we don't have enough assets. We're stretched too thin and have too many bases to cover. And it's not a question of we can choose that we're not going to cover certain areas or certain bases. It's that the adversaries are starting to challenge us in more and more places in real ways.
Yeah, we're talking to Captain Brent Sadler, retired. He's a naval expert who is now with the Heritage Foundation. And you've set the table for us, Captain Sadler, regarding the issues that we face from what's called near-peer adversaries like China and Russia. But the focus of your article piece last week in Defense One was really about how the Biden administration is addressing this threat. How did the Biden administration's first military budget seek for funds to address this growing threat from both China and Russia?
So I guess the first comment I'd have to make on that is based on the public statements and the testimony or the hearings that have been made on the Hill from Department of Defense to Congress on this very question, I'd have to say is inadequate. I hear policymakers and leaders in the Pentagon say that this budget reflects or addresses and deters China. However, I'm not convinced. For one, despite the statements of Admirals Davidson Aquilino and Admiral Aquilino, the current and the previous commanders of Indo-Pacific Command based in Hawaii, and by the way, the gentleman that will have to lead a war against China if that should come, both had testified in March that China has made every preparation and every indication to set the conditions for a war over Taiwan in the next 6 years. That's a sense of urgency. Now, there are other people that have made similar statements and similar calls for urgency, but the budget that was put forward puts a large emphasis on research and development for future capabilities. And quite frankly, our track record of delivering future capabilities in an accelerated timeline is not very good.
No, no. Just look at the literal combat ship for that, or or the Zumwalt class destroyer, and you can see that there's some colossal problems with that. But you pointed out some things. You pointed out some things, Captain Brent Sadler, in your article last week in Defense One that were fascinating just to ponder, and it's not necessarily intellectually taxing, but it's very common sense. Mm-hmm. For example, you point out that there's three parts to building a strong Navy: shipbuilding. Secondly, recruitment of sailors to operate those ships. And third, the training to make the Navy the most lethal force on the planet. But you're saying that the Biden administration's budget really didn't adequately address any of those three areas.
No, not at all. It actually walks back from promises and obligations that were made both to Congress, who's footing the bill, as well as the shipbuilders that need to know with certainty so they can plan their capital investments and pay their workers to build more ships. We're supposed to build 12. We've got 8 that are on this budget. And by the way, we're decommissioning 15, so it's a net decrement on the fleet. As far as training goes, for I would say, at least from my perspective, it's been 10 years, but at least it's been public for the last 3 years, that we need to get smarter about China. We have to understand the threat better. And this budget cuts several hundred million dollars from the education side of the house. And it's less than clear to me how, with less resources and less emphasis on that education part, that we're going to be training, more importantly, exercising the fleet the right way to outcompete the Chinese in the day-to-day peacetime, let alone when the bullets start flying, to win in a fight.
We're talking to Captain Brent Sadler, a naval expert who is now with the Heritage Foundation. And just last year, there was a fire broke out on the Wasp-class amphibious assault ship, the USS Bonhomme Richard. And really, just for discussion purposes, in case folks aren't familiar with that ship, it's really just a smaller version of an aircraft carrier. And the entire assault ship was literally destroyed because of this fire. So how does losing a ship of that magnitude impact naval operations worldwide?
Well, the first thing that it did is it took a ship that was working up, or was being modernized to handle the F-35 aircraft, advanced fighter, and it was on schedule to deploy within the year. However, taking that ship out of line meant that other ships that had maintenance or times for the sailors to be home or were on station that had to fill in that presence, so that mission gap. So very immediately it caused a trickle effect for more time at sea, maintenance deferred. It also took sailors off the line. Those sailors that were on the ship, they actually weren't assigned right away. So they were not doing the mission, the forward mission that we needed the sailors to do. But I'd have to come back to that platform with the F-35 aircraft on it would have been a significant addition to the fleet, and it's not going to happen.
We're talking to Captain Brent Sadler, naval expert, who is now at the Heritage Foundation. Hey, can you stick with us through the break? I've got a few more questions for you. You can tell I really, truly enjoy this topic. If you could stick around with us through the break, I'd like to continue our discussion. Is that okay?
Oh, absolutely.
Very good. We're going to take a break right now. When we come back, we're going to talk to Captain Sadler about the Ghost Fleet, about autonomous naval vessels, and how this could perhaps help close that gap that may be coming in the very near future with China's industrial capacity. Brad Young at your service here on Camo X. Don't go away.
Get the inside story on what's happening with your St. Louis Cardinals this season directly from the Redbirds manager. It's the Mike Schilt Show, Sunday mornings at 10:15, sponsored by Bath Fitter on your voice of the St. Louis Cardinals, KMOX.
Welcome back to At Your Service on Camo X, and we're talking this evening to Captain Brent Sadler. He's a naval expert who is now with the Heritage Foundation. And as I teased before the break, Captain Sadler, what is the Ghost Fleet? I mean, with ships with cool-sounding names like the Sea Hunter and the Seahawk, how might these cutting-edge naval technology demonstrators provide us with a cost-effective way to respond to the growing Russian and Chinese threat?
Absolutely. So I have a background in robotics and go back way further back in my career. And I don't think it's so often people talk about, hey, when there's no people on the ship or there's less, we'll have to pay less sailors, so there'll be a cost savings. And we'll also be able to employ these platforms in a more dangerous environment in conflict, and we won't have to worry about the human loss as much. We can actually be able to employ these weapons at greater risk. That's true, but the real advantage for these larger unmanned surface, subsurface, as well as the aircraft, is not them operating by themselves or operating in swarms, but teamed with manned platforms.
Yes.
And working together collaboratively.
So you could take, for example, and you're the expert here, but for example, if you paired these autonomous unmanned surface vehicles like the Sea Hunter or the Seahawk, and you paired them with an Arleigh Burke class destroyer, you could send those autonomous ships out. You extend out your sensor range, and if they happen to contain weapons such as naval strike missiles or even old-style harpoon missiles, wouldn't you increase then the lethality of that particular surface warfare group?
Absolutely. What you've just described is a concept that's well over 10 years old called distributed lethality that the Navy's been working on and refining and developing, and just did the first exercise at scale with multiple unmanned and manned ships off of San Diego back in late April of this year.
And how did that go? I mean, I'm not certainly asking for any classified information, but what's the, as far as the public non-confidential analysis of that exercise, how did it go, and did it demonstrate this proof of concept of distributed lethality that you're talking about here this evening?
Absolutely. So by all accounts, it was a great success. And for me, it was even a greater success because there were things in there that probably didn't go right. There were things, assumptions that were made that were proven false. That's a tremendous learning experience. This is the first time that at scale, multiple units done. So the amount of learning was a success. But operationally, there was at least publicly announced that an unmanned platform was able to launch a weapon, like an anti-ship weapon, against a target without using its sensors. So a weapon was launched, it was cued from another platform, and it hit a target successfully. So that's a tremendous advance and a concept that has been talked about and, I guess, tabletoped and exercised only in the computer space.
We're talking to Captain Brent Sadler, who's with the Heritage Foundation. And Captain Sadler, even though we have new ship classes on the horizon, from the newly awarded Constellation class frigate to the Columbia class submarine, these new ships are in effect years away from coming online and really do little, if anything, for our current security issues. So with this understanding of the current threat that you've been talking about here this evening and our current ability to respond to this threat, how do you believe the Biden administration should respond to this current threat?
Well, I think it's no longer a comfortable question of, do we invest our money in future capabilities to outpace our competitors' capability, or do we buy more platforms and match and outclass today and in the near term in numbers? The reality is you have to do both. The Chinese, in particular, are exceeding our ability to build, so they outnumber us. They already have 306 ships to our 297, and they're very close to us technologically. So it's no longer comfortable to say you can do one or the other. The Biden administration, the Navy, needs to do both. They need to double down on shipbuilding as well as R&D.
Excellent. Captain Brent Sadler, naval expert, who's now at the Heritage Foundation. Hey, thank you so much for spending your time with us this evening here on Camo X.
Oh, absolutely. Thank you for having me on.
My pleasure. Trust me, my pleasure. Hey, question. We're going to open up the phone lines now, 314-436-7900. Call or text. Is the Biden administration is the Biden administration missing the boat on responding to the growing Russian and Chinese threats? We've obviously got other things in the news to talk about today, but this isn't something that we get a lot of opportunities to discuss. and that is, how do we deal with China and Russia? What should we do? 314-436-7900. Call or text. Speaking of international issues and foreign affairs today, last week I was discussing, when I was here on with you last week, I was discussing a large measure my frustration with the Biden administration on how they're dealing with Iran. And there was some question about whether Iran and whether the United States has agreed to lift sanctions on Iran. Because, you know, we are trying to negotiate with Iran to stop their development of nuclear weapons. And I personally think that Israel's got the best approach. That is just blow up Iranian facilities and do it secretly so they can't trace it back to you. I mean, that's been the most effective. That and what's called Stuxnet, which was a computer virus that was launched against the Iranians more than a decade ago. And it really messed up their what's called their centrifuges, which is how they create uranium necessary for fissionable material that's required for nuclear weapons. But the Biden administration is taking a different approach. They want to talk. Well, it was announced today by Iran, of all people or of all countries, that they announced that the U.S. had agreed to lift the sanctions unilaterally that President Trump had put into place. And I'm quoting here. An agreement has been reached to remove all insurance, oil, and shipping sanctions that were imposed by former U.S. President Donald Trump, unquote, said the outgoing Iranian President Hassan Rouhani's chief of staff. So we haven't even gotten anything from the Iranians. We've gotten no agreements. We've gotten no agreement to stop the production of nuclear weapons. We've gotten no assurances of inspections to make sure that they're actually doing what they may claim to be doing. Nothing. We just unilaterally dropped the sanctions. And folks, listen, I negotiate for a living. That's what I do. Whenever my kids were smaller, they said, "Hey, Dad, what do you do for a living?" I said, "Well, I go to work every day and I play Monopoly with other people's money. And my job is to buy Park Place and Boardwalk for next to nothing. That's my job every day, and it's called negotiation." And if you're negotiating with the Iranians, you don't start the negotiations by saying, "We're just going to waive the sanctions." That's just not how you negotiate. So the Iranians claimed that the U.S. sanctions must be lifted if they were going to come to the table. But again, that's not how leverage works. That's not how negotiations works. Because the financial data is crystal clear on this. Iran's economy tanked after President Trump instituted new sanctions against Iran several years ago. It tanked. And since those sanctions were issued in 2018, oil production has plummeted. Oil exports plummeted. Inflation in Iran skyrocketed. The people are unhappy. Everyone except for the ruling mullahs, everyone is mad in the country of Iran. The good people of Iran are upset. They are putting pressure on the Iranian government. Now's not the time just to give in and say, okay. You want to know a great example of that negotiating strategy? That's when Dick Gephardt and Thomas Eagleton brought the Rams to St. Louis. Okay, do you know what their negotiation strategy was? Yes. So in other words, when the Rams said, "We want this much money to relocate to St. Louis," St. Louis's response was, "Okay." And they said, "Well, by the way, we want a clause in there. We want you to build us a brand new dome downtown." "Okay. Oh, and also we want you to have a clause in the contract that says after a specified period of time, if we don't have the best stadium in the NFL, then we get to pack up and move to another city." St. Louis's response, "Okay." I mean, that's not negotiation. I mean, that's like going to a car dealership and you walk onto the lot and you're looking at the car and you look at the sticker on the windshield and you say, "Okay." I mean, there's no negotiation there. That's called giving in. You go in and you say, oh, this car, it's got a sticker of $40,000. Oh, my goodness. You know, I could go on Auto Trader right now. I could buy that same car with 10,000 miles anywhere for half that price and negotiate down. I love buying cars. Oh, it's a thrill. I enjoy it. I wish I could buy cars every week. It's a lot of fun. It's called negotiation. But apparently no one in the Biden administration understands how to negotiate when it comes to the Iranian nuclear weapons package. Look, just give me like an hour with these guys. That's all I would ask. Just let me in there and I will help. I won't even charge the Biden administration a thing. In fact, I will charge far less than what Robert Mueller charged the United States government for the sham investigation of Donald Trump. That cost like $40 million. How about this? I'll do it for half of that. Okay. Robert Mueller spent $40 million. He got nothing. I'll charge you half of that, only $20 million, and I'll get you something. Okay. How is that for a deal? That, my friends, is capitalism in action. When we come back, we're going to talk about some other things that Biden did today, including having a press conference on how to end violence in America. You're going to want to hear this. And so don't go away. Brad Young here, KMOX at your service. We'll be right back.
Earning St. Louis's trust for 96 years. This is KMOX.
Welcome back to At Your Service. Brad Young in with you this evening. Talking about some foreign policy issues. You know, we don't talk about that a lot on radio. A lot of times it's more about domestic issues and financial issues and current event issues. But, you know, foreign policy issues, they're important. And so that's why I wanted to talk to Captain Brett Sadler tonight about some of these issues dealing with Russia and dealing with China. But today, President Biden kind of turned his focus on some more domestic issues today. In particular, he held a press conference late in the day. And the focus of the press conference was violence. Now, we've seen this here in the city of St. Louis. This has been one of the largest examples of spiking murders and crime throughout the country. But other cities, I mean, Atlanta, Chicago, Philadelphia, Los Angeles, Portland, Washington, D.C., all of these major urban centers have had just a tremendous, tremendous increase in murders and violence really over the past 18 months. So President Biden came out today to address these issues. And as one would expect in typical liberal progressive fashion, he blames things that have nothing whatsoever to do with the vast majority of the violence. So, for example, one of the things he said was he predicted that as summer is now here, that the spike that we've seen in violence and murders over the past year and a half would probably increase as the summer progresses. But then he wants to swiftly turn and blame hunters and gun owners and people who are interested in protecting their homes. And he says, no one needs weapons firing 100 rounds unless they thought, and I'm quoting, the deer are wearing Kevlar vests. Well, you know, that's a funny line, but that's not why people have 100-round clips for their weapons. That's not reason why they have that. And apparently, you know, Joe Biden bragged that he's been around Washington, D.C. and in Washington for 47 years. But, of course, for the last 47 years, he hasn't had any answers, so I'm not sure why we would expect him to have those answers now. But he apparently didn't read the case from the U.S. Supreme Court in 2008 called District of Columbia versus Heller. And I would just ask President Biden to, you know, you got people, just have someone give you an executive summary of D.C. versus Heller. It's not that long. It's about a 40-page opinion. And in that opinion, the Supreme Court lays out how the Second Amendment isn't just for hunting deer wearing Kevlar vests. It's for protecting one's home. It's for protecting one's family. It's for protecting one's property. Unless you think that's not really an issue today, go to Portland. You know, if you lived in Portland, Oregon, you would want a weapon over the past year and a half. when they had autonomous zones where the government supposedly didn't have any authority in Portland and in Seattle. Man, if I was living there, I would absolutely want to be protecting my home. And you can bet I would want a 100-round clip for my semi-automatic rifle to protect my home and family. You bet I would. It's not about hunting deer, Mr. President. It's about protecting freedom. And apparently he just doesn't understand that or has never bothered to read D.C. versus Heller. So read it. You know, President, Mr. President Biden, I'll even email you a PDF copy of the decision. Just call me. I'll be happy to email it to you. Not a problem. But he says that he points out in the press conference today that nationwide, homicides rose 30% and shootings spiked 8% in larger cities last year. Now, the first thing that unfortunately comes to mind is a lot of times it's these mass shootings where someone goes into a place of employment and kills 8 or 10 people. And that's tragic. And I'm not denying that happens. Of course it happens. But if you want to talk about where the crime is occurring with guns, it's not some guy with a Trump sticker in his on his back of his pickup truck. It's people who are really conducting mass slaughter in our urban centers across America. But yet his entire press conference today didn't really focus on that whatsoever. And in fact, when his press secretary was asked about ending cash bail, which allows these criminals to get back on the streets, the press secretary said that President Biden's still in favor of ending cash bail, meaning that people who commit violent crimes, it's like catch and release when you're at bush wildlife. You know, you catch a bass, you just let it go right back in the lake again. That's what they're doing with these violent criminals when they eliminate cash bail. He didn't address that at all. All he wanted to talk about was gun control and these isolated occurrences where mass shootings happen. They're tragic, yes. But the greatest threat to violence in this country is the threat that occurs in our cities. Brad Young here at your service on KMOX. Next hour, speaking of guns, Mark McCloskey. We're going to be talking to him next hour on At Your Service on KMOX.
T-Mobile has invested billions to light up America's largest 5G network, from big cities to small towns, including right here in yours. And great coverage is just the beginning. Right now, families and small businesses can save up to 20% versus AT&T and Verizon when they switch. Visit your local T-Mobile store today.
Plan savings with 3 lines of T-Mobile Essentials versus comparable available plans. Plan features and taxes and fees may vary.